welcome back to the side. I almost did it. Welcome back to the Inside Show podcast.
That's the right show. It's not Horse Guys.
No, it's the right show. Just the wrong bullshit joke name. So this is the Inside Show podcast still. Episode 416, your Memorial Day weekend edition. Not that that means anything in terms of the show, but that's when we're recording this. Is your stay opening up at all? We are cautiously dabbling back into it.
Okay. This weekend's going to be very telling. Obviously, being a holiday weekend and people want to get out more and stuff. And in our state, the beaches are open this weekend, but you're not allowed to like lay out on the beaches. Like they're open to like walk and like limited water activity and like play on kind of like a park. But just like the parks, you're not supposed to like sunbathe and lay out. Like you're supposed to keep moving. But
you shouldn't be doing that anyways. It's bad for you.
Well, in context of things, whatever. But yes. But there's also supposed to be limited capacity, so it's going to be interesting to see how it's handled, if it's handled. Some non-essential stores and stuff, I think, are allowed to reopen, but for like curbside pickup only. Which is interesting. And flawed, because like I've been saying this since the get-go, stores like Target, as though they have plenty of essentials, have not essentials that are not blocked off in the store. So like you can go get whatever, you can go in the store, but a mom and pop shop that's local, they might not have a website to order from. So like what is curbside pickup going to do, where they can let in two people who can socially distance and be safer than any supermarket or essential store that's been? So I'm curious. Way back when, I used to be a much more optimistic person. And in certain situations, especially personal situations, I can be. However, life has beaten me into realist bordering pessimist. And I have zero faith in humanity. And I would expect that after or shortly after this holiday weekend, things are going to be closed up again. Because you give people an inch, they're going to take a yard. I mean, let's face it. People can't seem to follow the simple directions to start with. I get there's a difficult balance of life and people, you know, trying to have a livelihood and stuff, but there's also safety. It's going to get worse before it gets better because of a variety of factors. And also that may happen anyway. The nature of this thing. But so that was a long-winded answer. Yeah, we're trying, but I don't have high hopes for it.
Yeah, and that's kind of the same place that Massachusetts is at. They rolled out like a, I think, three-phased plan for how they're reopening and what's allowed to be opening. So like small manufacturing businesses are allowed to be operational again, so we can start to bring employees back for my job, which is good.
Nice.
But you still can't go to certain stores, you know, movie theaters, concerts, shit like that is obviously not happening anytime soon. So They're phasing things in and kind of like dipping our toes in it. But I expect after a holiday weekend with some sort of, you know, relaxed plan in place, things are going to go backwards a little bit.
I also heard, I didn't read this myself, but I think actually my wife told me, so I'm going to call it legit, that apparently you could do larger gatherings of up to 25 people now, again, with social distancing in place and masks and all that. As opposed to the 10 it was limited to, which, I mean, if you have 10 people social distancing, what's the difference if you have 25 people social distancing, I guess?
Right, as long as you have the space to do it.
But, like, for example, my half-sister's birthday is Sunday. Yeah. So my brother-in-law texted the siblings and said, you know, they're just going to be hanging out in the backyard for birthday. If anyone wants to stop by and say hi, like, welcome to, we have enough room to social distance in the yard. And he said that they were just going to have like chips and veggie platter and stuff out. And I'm like, you know, social distance in the yard is one thing. I'm not dipping my hand in any common food. Also, you have to remove your mask to do that.
Yeah, dude. No.
So I talked to my sister and I talked to my mother because they might step over too. And we're all taking this very seriously. Not to get too personal with this, but like my parents are older. My sister has asthma. I have asthma. My sister's far worse than I am. But, like, we don't want to take the chances. And
no.
Mal and I just went shopping yesterday, like, necessity shopping. So, like, we could have been exposed. So, we'll go and say hi for, like, up to an hour, maybe, social distancing, then we're leaving. It's not going to be like a barbecue. And I don't think he's trying to treat it that way, but I know it's weird. I get it. It's difficult and strange times.
Yep.
Speaking of concerts, though, I know you've watched some Jimmy's Chicken Shack live performances. Have you taken part in any other live or like these concert streams or 24-hour streams or things like that?
I haven't yet. So they just did, so the Jimmy's Chicken Shack thing, the front man has been doing like little acoustic couch concerts since this whole thing started. Cause he used to host an open mic night every Wednesday. So he's just turned that into doing his own solo performance. But the one I posted about last week was a full band one. They were able to get into a studio that had separate rooms everywhere and hook up webcams and whatnot and be able to play as a full band. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was really good. It has me rethinking my take on the idea of concerts, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. It was nice to be able to be like, you know, instead of standing for 3.5 hours watching, you know, bands that you don't care about to get to the one that you do care about and being pushed around in a whole bunch of sweaty people and paying $10 for a beer, it's like I'm sitting on the couch listening at whatever volume I want, drinking what I want, wearing pajamas. This is great. And like, it still, as opposed to a produced DVD or something, you know, where it's like, oh, you're going to be watching the guitar solo. Like, you could still be watching what the drummer is doing or what the bass player is doing, because you're watching all four of them simultaneously. It has a much more like personal live feel, but is in the comfort of your own home. And I kind of really enjoy it. It's not going to stop me from going to regular concerts if this becomes more of a thing. But it was thoroughly enjoyable. And I'm sure you've been seeing the posts for the Slay at Home Fest that's happening pretty soon that Metal Injection is hosting. That's this weekend, I think. They've got a whole bunch of good bands and artists and collaborations, and they're doing like cover sets and having art as part of it. Like it's like a full on festival, but from your couch. And it's pay what you want to attend it. I'm using air quotes there. And the whole thing is going to be shared over to YouTube when it's done. So you'll be able to watch all these performances of like good bands, kind of at your own leisure. So I'll definitely be dipping into that some. But that's the extent of it for me thus far.
Okay. So Slay at Home Fest is next weekend. It's the
next weekend.
29th and 30th.
I was off that week.
Lineup includes Tesseract, Suicide Silence, Darkest Hour, Elysian. I'm just highlighting here. Cadaver, Spirit Adrift, Astronoid. Wow.
It's got some good bands. Like, I want to watch Spirit Adrift.
Entheos, like, Chemists. Matt Hafey, Employed to Serve, Mantar. Oh, I might have to take. So I asked because I haven't taken part in any of this yet.
It's awesome.
I read this morning about some of it. Now, there's also the other thing where they do like older performances. You can like pay to watch like the Gojira Live at Red Rocks that happened. Yep. Of course, I read about it after the fact, but it was like available for 24 hours. Supposedly it was awesome. And then it's like gone. It all sounds good. I just, you know, especially the scheduled ones, like I just, you know, find out about it too late. And I guess I'm not doing my homework to keep up on it, but I haven't done any of it. I don't know why. I should. I've been catching up on movies. That's where I've been putting my time and energy. This Slay at Home Fest, I'll probably, May 22nd, they're going to announce the lineup by day.
Okay. That was yesterday. So
that's funny because I'm on the website and click lineup a day. It says come back on May 22nd. So that's interesting.
Well, they delay it, obviously. It's been something I really enjoy. Like, as I said, it's when concerts resume again, it's not quite the same as being there, especially for like a metal show. Like, you know, you're not going to get that same energy in the room sitting on your couch. But for something like Jimmy's Chicken Shack, which is, you know, a rock band, but not something that you're going to be like, you know, packed in a mosh pit to or something. It was really enjoyable, and it has a completely different feel and vibe than, you know, watching a stream of a live at the Red Rocks, where like you're getting whatever camera angle they chose to show you at the time. You're getting all right. angles all the time.
Yeah, I think there's a place for it, and I wouldn't mind if more of those things continued. It's not going to replace concerts for me. No. In the long run, I should say. Obviously, in the short term, it has to, but... yeah, so obviously the Deftones tour finally got delayed till next year.
Yeah.
It's the last one I had tickets for that was not rescheduled. I had mentioned the Bloodbath one getting postponed, but it actually got canceled. So I'll be getting a refund on that. So I'm 2 for 2 on Bloodbath. Maybe they won't even try next year because this won't all be over. And then in 2022, I can maybe see the band. Maybe I'll put my money into getting the live version of the vinyl version of the live album, because I never bought that. The Rage tour is rescheduled for next year around the same time, so hopefully hopefully it'll work out. I mean, obviously these things are being rescheduled for 2021. It's way more probable, yet still a little hopeful, I think, going forward. But I have to say, so far, knock on something, that further album delays I haven't seen too much of. Obviously, I've seen announcements for later in the year. Nick and I were just discussing this morning that Devil Driver announced the first half of their double album, which means one of two albums, for, I think, October, and the other one's not announced yet. They just released a single. So things are coming, and... that's good, because that'll help keep the show moving along.
Yeah, for sure.
You have something?
Yeah. No, that's it. Speaking of which, yeah. let's do the show part of the show.
So, yeah, speaking of which, a new release. We have three this week, and the first one of that is Paradise Lost with their 16th album, Obsidian.
Holy shit. 16, huh?
Yeah, these guys have
been, I don't think I realized that. Yeah. I know they've been around forever, but, like, that's a huge number.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been around a long fucking time, and they've had quite the career. Sorry for the noise. I'm typing. Lost Paradise, their most death metal album, came out in 1990, following a couple demos going far back as 88. Obviously... you know of albums such as Gothic and Draconian Times kind of creating almost or being legendary in, you know, Gothic metal or in especially, you know, in Doom. The middle of their career got a little weird, and they seem to have a resurgence starting with Faith Divides Us, Death Unites Us. And we first covered them after that with Tragic Idol. Which, honestly, that was 2012, and honestly my first foray into the band. I mean, there's just... Obviously, we love finding new music, and I still have trepidation getting into bands I haven't heard before that have long catalogs, because I don't know where to go with it, how to start, what I want to keep track of going forward. But Tragic Idol sold me. I went back and bought a whole bunch of things. And I think that was... Nick's last real interest in the band as well, despite our covering since then. And they've grown on me, and they've gotten slower and doomier, actually. Tragic Idol probably had most in common with Draconian Times, as far as the somewhat upbeat pacing and mood to it, despite its dark and gothic tones. Plague Within was darker. Medusa got a little darker, though I think it was a little better written. And, like, if any of you remember, I gave that a 5 and love the album. So while Obsidian doesn't really show much of where the band is going so much, because there's not a lot of new ideas, they take a lot of ideas from their back catalog and merge it into this album. It is much darker, it is a bit gothier and slower, without going into full doom territory where it's just plodding along. You get the death growls, you get Nick Holmes' clean singing. The flow of this album to me is fantastic. It just keeps a really great pace. Songs move into each other really nicely without, you know, it's not something that sounds like one long song at all, but it just has a really good tracking. And the highlight here to me is Gregor McIntosh, who is the lead guitarist and also primary songwriter. The solos here are fantastic. He writes such good hooks and melodies throughout the album that is what keeps it moving and helps make this album stick with me after I've listened to it, where there's parts of it that are just playing over in my head. So lyrically, Nick is, it's not the most subtle work he's done, but it works. His execution of it works. I mean, I love his singing voice probably more than his growl. His growl is effective, but it's like many singers who are this far into the career, it's not as good as it used to sound, but it works. They make it fit. So I find myself kept going back to it. It was easy for me to get into it and stay with it. It might not have much new for the band, but the way they've made an amalgamation of most of their catalog into this, just really worked for me.
Yeah, I am of two minds on this one. As you said, this band generally I get less interested in over time. And while that probably still applies, this album had a slight uptick in my repeat listenability to it. And honestly, for me, the hook to it was the drumming.
Okay.
It's a lot more lively. Like, I went back and listened to Medusa, which I gave a 3. And it's just, it was so by the books, not a lot of fills, not a lot of dynamic playing, just like, here's drums, gotta keep time. And it was just boring. That is my general review of Medusa, is I was bored. This is interesting. It's dynamic. There are big changes. There are like really good percussive parts. They hit harder when the songs get more into like their more death metal roots and picking up that older style. And it has just more dynamics. Like there are bigger passages. It has more hooks in the big clean parts. It definitely has a better give and take of, you know, kind of the range that they run. And it was a lot more engaging. That said, I think I'm just like out of my gothy doom phase of interest in music. Like, and these guys didn't hit me at a sweet spot where, like, you know, I'm going to continue to go back to them like Catatonia did. And even, you know, as we talked about, was that last episode, 2 episodes ago? Like, that Catatonia album was fine, but like, it didn't really strike me, you know? And I have older Catatonia if I want that. Like, this kind of classic rock style doom is just something that I don't go to that often. I don't really do the goth rock thing that much anymore. And the other bands that do it that I either picked up on earlier or that do something a little different on, I tend to have more interest in. Like, this strikes me almost the same way that straight up death metal strikes me.
Okay.
Like, you know, I need the modifiers. I need the more like crazy guitar solo and huge hooks of A Spirit Adrift. I need the thicker distortion, like sparse range of, you know, mid-era Catatonia. If I want full-on doom, I tend to go something more Pallbearer. If I want the progressive angle of something, I'm going to go with Chemist.
Right.
Like, you know, that I'm not anti this genre. I just need it to have some other sort of something infused into it to have me still care about it. I think there was a time probably 15 years ago where this would have been my jam, but it's just not where I'm at anymore.
Fair enough.
And I can acknowledge that, but at the same time also realize that this is a better album than the last 2, maybe 3 that they've put out. So it's been a hard one for me to put a number on. Because at first blush, I was like, yep, it's another Paradise Lost album. I just don't really care about this genre anymore. It's a 3. But, you know, because we are trying to be diligent and not super biased while doing a review show, which doesn't always work,
yeah.
You know, I did spend more time with it. And on repeat listens, as you said, the hooks are there. The big solos are there. It is definitely more memorable than the last few things they've done. So trying to compare it to the rest of their catalog, or at least their recent catalog, I do think this is a step in the right direction. I think this is a better release. So I'm inclined to give this a 4, but at the same time say I'm probably not going to go back to it. Like, it's just not generally where my head is at anymore.
Fair.
But this is good writing.
And that's good, because I think I have to... I haven't sat and listened to this and Medusa, like, back and forth. I don't know which one I will favor better, favor more in the long run, but this is at least as good as Medusa to me. So I'm going to give this a 5, which makes a nice 4.5, which I feel is... I gave Medusa a 4.
You did, huh. Yeah. I was going to correct you on that, but I figured
it out. No, I figured it out. But yeah, all right. Then this is still getting a 5.
Okay.
I listened to this, I streamed it, or actually I bought it digitally, and then listened to it like a couple times, and then went to my computer and bought the vinyl. I actually did that first, which is, I've been doing better at that. But I'm glad the vinyl sound, I mean, this is, like most of their albums, is produced very well. Actually, the production on this is a bit better than Medusa. I like Medusa's production. This is cleaner and clearer, but it, which helps fit the melodies and the dynamics of the music too. So it works and it translates well to Wax. So, a 4.5 for Paradise Lost Obsidian. Check out the song The Devil Embraced.
All right, that was The Devil Embraced from Paradise Lost's 16th release, Obsidian, out on Nuclear Blast. Next up for you, we have some AC/DC. That is Antichrist Demon Corps, for those keeping track. We're not doing, like, actual AC/DC. Their newest album, Satan is King, is out on Prosthetic. We covered these guys. Wow, this is a long time ago. That was 2015.
Yeah.
Does that feel like 5 years ago?
No.
No. No, it doesn't. I would have guessed two. So, okay, this is our second time with this band. If you're not familiar with this version of AC/DC, they are power violence. They are just straightforward, blasty nastiness of, you know, minute and a half songs for the most part. And there's not a ton different between their first outing and this. Production has stepped up a lot. Mm-hmm. The songs are a little bit more caustic. And there is a bit more variation in pacing on this, which is something that I tend to always want when we do a power violence album. They're always short, obviously. That's kind of like, that's baked in.
Yeah.
You know, this is 15 songs at 24 minutes. Like, you know, when we first started talking about Nails, I think that first album was, what, 18 or something like that? But even those early Nails and Weekend Nacho albums that we liked a lot, we had the same kind of complaint in that the songs all sort of start to sound the same by the latter half of the album. And it's when you get to later Nails albums, or Still by Weekend Nachos, or in this case, Satan is King from AC/DC, where you're starting to get full song structures in that minute and a half, and you get, you know, tempo and feel changes, and you get some more like breakdown style riffs, and they develop a bit more of a groove that makes it more rewarding to listen to. Like, all of the grind and blast is all still there, but a song like Turncoat on this one that comes in, you know, five tracks in, and then again with the song that we're going to play for you a little while later in the album, it just like full stop, halftime feel, chug. And like that balance against what is otherwise just a breakneck speed album really pays off. And it helps both bolster what you're listening to on the more traditional power violence grindy end of things, and also makes the heavy part heavier.
Right.
And that is a wonderful give and take dynamic. I can't say this is like wholly original or reinventing the wheel. It's not fair to say it's riding the coattails of what some other bands have put out before them, but it does kind of feel that way at the same time. Like it's developing on that kind of dynamic that we've seen from a few other bands, but it's one that we enjoy and they do it well.
Yeah.
So it's not a huge change or a huge step forward from what we got from their last album, but it is an improvement, I'd say, pretty much across the board.
I agree with that. And, you know, while a band doesn't generally try to pigeonhole themselves into a specific genre, genres have obviously by name have a certain constraint to them. And I feel like power violence is very constrained. If you mm-hmm. branch too much one way, you're hardcore, another way, you're punk, another way, you're grindcore. And what Antichrist Demon Corps has done is stay within the confines of, whether intended or not, can still be labeled power violence, but adds, like I said, enough dynamics, a strong word, subtlety and changes, whether it's, you know, a slow down pacing and gorged, or even kind of a stop and go thing and mouth breather or whatnot. It's not even necessarily a reprieve of the heaviness and aggressiveness of it, but more interesting songwriting. Mm-hmm. This is caustic and violent and, like, just angry. I'm trying to think of a better word than angry, but it's just like the vitriol of it is just nasty. Nasty is a good word. It's exactly what you'd want, and the style of it is what I like from this. As we've discussed many times before, of some of the aforementioned bands, like Nails or something like Scum Guts, is more my speed than even Weekend Nachos was. Not I have anything against them. So this fits right into there as just being relatively straightforward and violent as I'd want it to be. And as I said, the production is far, far superior.
So
I don't know if that has to do with the label being signed to Prosthetic, or that came before being signed to prosthetic, but either way, it works. And the writing's subtle step forward just makes us better. I mean, it's great. I'm still giving it a 4, yeah. But I do love this.
Yep, I'm landing on a 4 as well. This is definitely improvement over the last one. It was a very different listen this week compared to what else we had, and it was a welcome change for me. So that is 2 4s for AC/DC's latest Satan is King. It's out on prosthetic. We're going to play the song Come Out Fighting.
So that was Come Out Fighting by Antichrist Demon Core off of their album Satan is King. And that will take us to Black Label. And for this week, well, this show and next, I got to stop saying week. I don't think that's ever going to happen. Yeah. That we are going to focus on Southern Lord recordings. Obviously a little bit bigger than a couple others we've been focusing on, but it's a label we've like treaded in but haven't spent a lot of time in, and there's a reason for that. So the label formed back in technically 98, though it was about 2000 that we saw its first releases. It was founded by Greg Anderson, who was a member of member of Thor's Hammer and Burning Witch, along with Stephen O'Malley. When those bands broke up, the two guys found each other again in Los Angeles. They ended up forming the band Sun and starting the label. So, as you'd expect from those bands and those aforementioned bands, this label initially focused on drone and doom and slower things of that nature. It had become quite the hotbed for that, if you will. They've expanded, obviously. They started releasing a bunch of black metal, and more recently, things of the core nature. We've seen Black Breath come from them, Jesus Peace, the first two Nails albums, Darkest Hour, which I still find weird.
That one doesn't fit.
It doesn't, even for this label, it doesn't fit. They've become quite a pace for the underground. It's their mission, as stated by the label themselves, is to, quote, create a sanctuary for bands, artists, musicians to have their creative works released exactly as their own vision was intended. And it's funny to hear that because I would tend to think most independent labels, that's how it works. Like, you know, once we've covered, especially being Redefining Darkness and Transcending Obscurity, like, they're clearly releasing how the artists go with that. But when you look at a major label, that doesn't always happen. Albums get reworked, reined in, whatever, to fit what their I'm sorry, my cat is going fucking nuts. I don't know how she found her way in here in the first place.
That's great. I love it. People love cats. It's fine.
Such a pain in my ass. had to call it out because Nick's starting to laugh at her meowing around me. Anyway, so that's just the basis that they've released. Again, a lot of Doom stuff. They've released some stuff from Dylan Carson of Earth. If anybody remembers Probot, a project Dave Grohl had started, or I should say done. It was a one-off thing. They put that out. They worked with Wino. So they put out a lot of interesting things like that, a lot of some re-releases of classic stuff. It's all over the place. We're going to dive more into this next week as we check out some of the insight into the label, their personal, what they consider personal successes, failures, favorite things, etc. But for now, that gives you the gist of Southern Lord. Anything you'd like to add to that?
Not really. The only band that you missed that was an early like turn on for me was Enabler.
Oh yeah, really?
Found their start on All Hail the Void was the one album we reviewed from them before they moved labels.
That's true. Somehow,
but that is a band I go to. I mean, still a lot. That is a like touchstone for me in that more crusty sound.
That's weird.
And we have these guys to thank for the platform. I mean, well, at its core, it may not be generally a style of music that we go to, and therefore you would think a label that we wouldn't touch on that often. They have expanded into more of just underground good stuff, whether it's, you know, in that more doomy, droney sort of thing, or expanding more into, you know, the punk side of things, the black metal side of things, whatever. I just checked. We've covered 14 releases by these guys, which, I mean, is fairly large, but it's also a couple repeat bands and sort of, you know, touching on a diverse smattering of their catalog. Definitely something that our general personal taste butt up against in certain spots, but not all of. So it was fun to kind of learn more about the label and dip into some stylings that may not be our general cup of tea and see where it fits, which perfect example of which, one of the bands that started this for them is a band that the two founders played in called Goat Snake. And they put out an album originally, I think back in 2000 or 2002. And then they released a new album 15 years later. And we're going to play a song from that called Elevated Man. And listening to it for the first time, trying to pick something that fit like that kind of origin style sound of it, I was like, this is not something I would normally seek out, but I really enjoyed it. I've already emailed a couple people to be like, hey, check it out. This is something you'll really enjoy. I added it to my iTunes catalog already, and I'm going to be spinning the album in full when we're done recording this. So it's like, that's why we're doing this whole black label segment, is to find things from labels that either we don't know at all or that we know and have preconceived ideas of, and then dig a little deeper and find something new that may appeal to us. And that definitely happened like literally right now. So with that, we're going to play the song Goat Snake. We're going to play the band Goat Snake with the song Elevated Man from Southern Lord, our black label pick for the month. And hopefully you enjoy it. And we'll do another one, probably a more modern release or something a little bit different for you on the next episode. Check it out.
Shifting, we begin.
All right, that was Elevated Man from Goat Snake, out on Southern Lord back in 2015, our Black Label pick for the month. Last album this week, we are shifting gears yet again pretty drastically, and we are ending with Aether Realm and their newest album, Redneck Vikings from Hell, out on Napalm. These guys are a diverse panel, is what I'm going to say up top about that. So this is our third time covering them. If you're not familiar or don't remember, they are a melodic death metal folk band that sounds like they're from anywhere in Scandinavia by way of North Carolina, which is odd.
Yep.
So they are talented, impressive musicians that make weird decisions, I think would be a safe way of wording that. So this album, as you would guess by the title, Redneck Vikings from Hell, is a bit of a departure from their previously longer song structure, more straightforward melodic death, serious music. Not that's all super serious, but like definitely has more of that vibe. And this is a little bit more goofy.
Yep.
I think is the right word. I mean, you get Redneck Vikings from Hell. They had a song called Swamp Witch on a previous album, and then She's Back is revisiting the Swamp Witch. And it just, it's, they would be very comfortable on tour with Ailstorm. We'll put it that way.
Yep. You're stealing my notes.
Okay, good. And that's not bad. We like Ailstorm. And what is on here is good. It's just so different. The playing is really talented. The hooks are definitely here. They shortened everything, made everything more concise, wrote bigger like pop choruses and hooks. It's an extremely accessible album. And the playing is still really good. But what's weird about it is when you lean so hard into the comedy of it, and then put in a song like Guardian, which is a radio rock ballad circa early 2000s. The entire time, like going to that first chorus where it's like super sappy lyrics and you could predict what the next line was going to be by hearing the first one because everything was in rhyming couplets and like super like love song sappy. I was waiting for the other shoe to drop the whole time because that's five songs into the album and I'm already of the perspective that this is a joke album. I'm waiting for the comedy. And it doesn't. That song is just like hat in hand, hey, I love you. And it just like, why is that track five? It just doesn't work. If that was the last song on the album, instead of an 11-minute instrumental, it would make more sense to me. Of like, hey, we wrote one serious song, but filtered it through like the Nickelback song structure filter for you. And this, it's weird. It's just a weird delivery. There are moments on it, on the album, that I thoroughly enjoy, but there are plenty of moments where you just kind of like step back from it. And you're like, why? What am I listening to? Which is both a blessing and a curse. We talk all the time about bands getting pigeonholed and getting like really stagnant in their writing and what they're doing. And these guys clearly are not afraid to switch it up. And some of the decisions they made, I really like. I like these shorter songs. I like them more to the point. Some of the riffs on here are really good. Like the main riff in Slave to the Riff, which I believe is the song we're going to play for you at the end of the episode. Like, there's some really good moments on here. There's no doubt about that. And I like a lot of the direction they took. But it's just a lot in like sort of funny, sort of poppy, still definitely like Swedish melodic death, and then also still kind of trying to be folk at times, is like a really broad palette that is not well-defined enough to really work as a cohesive album. And that, to me, is the shortcoming. There's nothing on here that I inherently dislike, but it's hard to get into because it's just jarring always.
My notes and comments echo yours exactly. I initially wrote to think of this band as Calma meets Ailstorm, but then I had to add in metalcore because, like, some of the writing is so chunky and riffed like metalcore more than melodic death. And yes, there is a difference. And I think some of that comes through really in the beginning of Slave to the Riff, actually, is a decent example of that. and the comedy is not, is fine. It's just not steady enough almost throughout the album. Mm-hmm. And then while there's obviously pop stylings in some of the clean areas and whatnot, a song like TMHC, the writing is much more poppy in its structure than even a lot of the other songs. So we talk about liking diversity and dynamics, but there's also the, when you cross a line where you just become unorganized and almost sloppy in the execution of it. It's definitely to a fault where you're not focused. I like, yeah, some of the stuff is really strong. The riffing, generally the guitar work throughout the album is excellent. And some of the riffs and solos are fantastic in any song. But even if they just stuck with Calma Meets Alestorm and take out the metalcore aspect or take out the Alestorm aspect so you're not as silly. I mean, they lean into it hard from the opening track with the spoken word saying, okay, we are from North Carolina. A lot of our folk elements are going to come from that. We're doing this whole shtick. And then, like you said, they pull you out of it when it comes to Guardian. And I don't know. It was hard to like the whole album. I like parts of it. I think it just, they needed to, we literally just talked about, A&R reps and how they can work in bigger labels and having bands focus and redo things like that needed this year. Somebody needed to step in and go, maybe we retract this, pull this out, save for next time, do something to just focus the album better.
Yep.
So it's a 3.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I appreciate the effort to push bounds, but I don't necessarily appreciate the bounds in the direction that they were pushed.
Right.
But kudos to them for trying something different, for being very willing to step outside of their general writing and do something adventurous. Like, I applaud that. I'm curious to see what the next album is. You know, if they kind of find a center but keep some of the writing and structures of these songs, but work it back into that. We'll see. But it's a bit of a miss for me, but I appreciate what they're going for. So we're going to end on that. We'll play a song for you in a minute. As always, please head over to sideshowpodcast.com. Let us know what you thought of anything we covered. Give us suggestions for future Black Label segments. Pop on over to iTunes via the links on the side there. Do a little bit of shopping if you're doing that. And it gives us a couple dollars in kickback, which is good for continuing to host things. Give us a like on the social medias. We're on all of them. And as always, give us a review on iTunes if you have not. It helps other people find the show. I think that's it. I have nothing else to plug. Oh, obviously, we do another podcast. We've mentioned that the last few times. I'm going to keep mentioning that. Go to horrorscouts.com if you're a fan of horror movies. Subscribe to that one. We are recording an episode
soon, next week.
Right? Next week. Okay. Man, trying to balance like 2 podcasts with weird recording schedules spaced out kind of every other week, but not really. And then also the auxiliary content that we're kind of planning on doing for Horror Scouts has become a nightmare to keep in my head. But yeah, so we've got some fun, exciting stuff coming on that. Go give us a like and a follow for that one. Check out that podcast. Those are also available on YouTube. You can find the link to the channel over there. That's going to do it. We're going to leave you with the song Slave to the Riff from Aether Realm's latest Redneck Vikings from Hell. Check it out, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. We're just another fucking life. It's 3 a.m. and I should get some sleep. Balls of gold scattered at my feet. Just in a feeling that I haven't felt since way back when. I held a foolish hope. This would bring me peace. I lost. Try to make it better.
Close your eyes, let the melody hold you for a while.